Welcome to Sleepover Cinema, where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of those who think avoiding contractions such as I'm or don't makes them sound royal. I'm Hannah Leach.
And I'm Audrey Leach. We are the sister filmmaking duo, also known as Two Pink Productions, and we haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them.
We're going to explore the good, the bad, and the nonsensical of the movies that first inspired our love for film in an attempt to answer the age-old question, are these movies actually good? And at the end of the day, do we really care if they are?
Today, we are talking about 2009's Princess Protection Program.
Once upon a time, there were two very different girls, a princess from a small kingdom and a girl from a small town. But when fate brings them together...
I had to bring her here. The director didn't give me a choice.
A normal dad would go to a foreign country on a secret mission and bring his daughter back a t-shirt, not a person.
They've got to team up to help this would-be queen pass for a regular teen.
What'll it be?
Bowling, please. There's a shock.
Find out what happens when royalty...
You're supposed to be blending in. I am blending.
...meets reality.
Hi, Audrey.
Hi.
Welcome. Okay, you know what I've noticed? I always say hi, Audrey, and you always say hi, and you never say my name.
I know.
It's so rude.
Do you want me
yeah,
to?
Yeah, I want you to call me by my name.
Hi, Hannah.
Thank you.
Feels weirdly formal to me.
Well, we're opening a podcast, so there is some structure and formality to it. Is there not?
Hola. Hannah, ¿cómo estás?
That's very true to the spirit of this movie today.
Oh, true.
The theme has already begun to emerge, even in our intro. We really hope that you enjoyed last week's episode, our collab with Good Children. I still can't believe that even happened because we're such huge fans of them. But, you know, got into a classic. Make sure to listen to their podcast if you don't already. And we love them. So thank you to Joe and Andrew again for having joined us.
Yes.
Also, we have a couple little reviews that we want to read. And I know you're probably thinking, oh, another podcast reading reviews at the beginning. Here's the thing, though. We want you to write us a review. So this is your gentle reminder to write us a review.
If you write us a review, we'll stop reading them. we won't read them on the podcast because we will have had enough reviews to not worry.
We don't have to be gently prodding everyone to write a review. Unless it's like a whatever, unless you want to hear your review. If the people want to hear it, then we will give it to the people. However, yes. It remains to be seen. Okay, Audrey, do you want to read this first one?
Yes. Yeah, so the first one comes from Maddie, and the little title subject line is so much fun. And she said, my dad read about this podcast and recommended it to me because I'm in the exact age group for this podcast. I'm so glad he did. It's a ton of fun listening to discourse about the movies that shaped me. Really loving it. Which leads me to wonder, where could somebody have read about it? I don't know.
I think that it must have been something from Evergreen. Thank you, Maddie, though. Thank you so much for this kind review. Okay, our next one. Title, underrated. I have to agree. And this is how the review goes. A great retrospective look into the films that shaped a generation, for better or for worse. They bring the research and objective facts to contextualize the films that makes you appreciate aspects of the films more. They also bring great personalities and the sister dynamic compounds to the movie's nostalgic factor. Love this podcast so much. Keep doing y'all's thing. Written by The Groping Grape. This is such a good review. Thank you so much. And I'm really curious where The Groping Grape came from. So The Groping Grape, if you're out there, please slide into our DMs because are you The Groping Grape? Or do you call someone else The Groping Grape? Like, I'm really curious.
What's your name? We know your name, not your story.
Exactly. So please let us know your story.
Yeah. And then our last one is from Lindsay Powell, and the title is The Nostalgia is Real. These girls put in the work. Not only do they share their love for these movies, but they bring the facts to every episode. They list everything there is to know and love about these movies, and I'm obsessed. Highly recommend.
Thank you, our lovely reviewers. And again, please leave us a review if you haven't yet. Okay, hot take of the week.
I had an idea that I told you about.
Right.
Okay, so I had an idea to do a song versus song because guess what? That's just all we're doing now, apparently.
Yeah.
Disney Channel collab songs. There are two main ones that I can think of, but there are more than two. One being A Dream is a Wish Your Heart Makes, starring like every Disney Channel star from our, like our true childhood. Yeah. Like, what do you think? Like 06, 07-ish? Younger,
earlier than that. Earlier than that.
Yeah, maybe like 05, something like that. It's got, because it's got Raven, it's got Annalise Vanderpool, it's got
it has the Sprouse Orlando. Twins, like, talk singing in unison.
And then that one versus Send It On, which was in the Selena, Demi, Miley, Jonas Brothers era. And that one is about, like, saving the Earth.
Yeah, it's like Earth Day. Like, I don't know if it's literally Earth Day, but I think it was.
Yeah.
Here's my thing. As we will get into in this episode, I'm not really a passionate Disney Channel consumer. Like, I was kind of old for it when we finally found it.
You were also just like alt.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Like, that came up in the High School Musical episode. Like, I'm not a huge Disney Channel girl. Yeah.
Which is heavily ironic now.
I know. I know. I'm a poser. I'm going to say A Dream is a Wish Your Heart Makes just because I'm a hater of most of the people in, well, at the time I was a hater of the people in Send It On. But the song is pretty catchy.
And you still are. You still are.
I'm not a hater of the Jonas Brothers or.
That's just because you don't know them at all.
I feel like my holding out against Miley is controversial, but, like, why is everyone just, like, pretending not to see bangers?
Have you ever listened to that whole album? I had never listened to it in earnest. And then the drag queen Alaska, yeah. Thunderfuck, had a show because she does these pop star shows yeah. at $3 Bill, which is near my apartment. Yeah. And she did one for bangers and I went and it honestly sparked a real interest in that album yeah. because there are so many songs on it that had they weren't singles and they didn't like make it to the mainstream yeah. really. And it's honestly worth giving a listen.
I like the one that's like High on Perp with My Shades On. That one.
And that one is atrocious from like a white girl perspective.
Right.
but the album as a whole, I kind of have to respect it.
I just don't give a shit. I just feel like, I mean, is it not true that like a lot of white pop stars have like their low-key blackface phase and then they move on to whatever they actually want to mm-hmm. do. Like, that just makes me cringe. I mean, like, Ariana yeah, is the same way. Like,
mm-hmm. yeah, it is cringy. Yeah. It is. But I still think that there's a lot of me. Like, I can pick out, like, one or two songs from every era that she's had that I really, really like.
I'm happy for you.
Yeah. Anyway, but I would still pick A Dream is a Wish Your Heart Makes over Send It On yeah. because who doesn't want to hear really awkward singing?
A Dream is a Wish Your Heart Makes wins. No contest yeah. with us.
I just like Send It On is way more of like a original song ballad moment. Yeah. But
well, I also, and this is going to come up later in the episode, I feel like that song was really banking on the like weird narrative of them all being best friends. Which they were so into, but it was like, it always felt a little forced.
Yes.
And we will get into that for sure in this episode. But okay, let's get into the facts because we have much to discuss here. So the Princess Protection Program was, it premiered on Disney Channel on May 20th, 2009. It was not rated, but I'm guessing it would be like Y7 if it had been rated. It was directed by Allison Liddy Brown, who has directed a bunch of episodes of all the following: Friday Night Lights, Heartbreak, The Passage, Grey's Anatomy, one episode of L Word Generation Q, a bunch of Scandal, Parenthood, etc. If anyone has watched L Word or L Word Generation Q, you should join our Discord so we can talk about it on the gay thread because I really love the L Word. Okay, the screenplay was written by Annie DeYoung, who also wrote Johnny Capahala Back on Board and Return to Halloween Town for Disney. And then there's another person with a story credit named David Morgeson, who had story credits for Son of the Beach, I don't know what that is, and Nightstand. And of course, this movie was produced by and for Disney Channel. This was a pretty central project for them, probably, considering that they had like two of their most bankable stars in it at a time when they were really at their peak of relevance for Disney.
Okay, here are the synopses. The first one is from IMDb, and it is: a princess whose country has been invaded goes into hiding in Louisiana, where she has to learn to act like an ordinary teenager. Mm-hmm. The second one is from Rotten Tomatoes. After a military takeover, a princess, Demi Lovato, assumes a new identity and stays with a covert agent and his daughter, Selena Gomez. And finally, from Letterboxd: when an evil dictator threatens to take over the kingdom, Princess Rosalinda gets put into the Princess Protection Program. She is taken under the wing of General Joe Mason, an agent from the agency, and his daughter, Carter, who works after school at a nearby bait shop. Rosalinda goes undercover as a regular teen named Rosie with the help of Carter. In turn, Rosalinda helps Carter overcome insecurities with herself and her crush on Donnie, who also likes her but can't tell or get shy. What?
Writing really fell off the ledge there at the end, but you get the point, basically. And we have one tagline.
One tagline: royalty meets reality.
Boo. Okay, so let's talk about this cast. Of course, we have Demi Lovato as Rosalina.
Rosalinda.
Oh, fuck. It's Demi Lovato. How you know who they are. But they are best known for having been in Camp Rock, Sunny with a Chance, obviously Princess Protection Program. And they were also in Grey's Anatomy. Who knew? But
Glee.
Are they in Glee?
Way later.
Okay.
Way later.
I'm like on episode 16 of season one right now, everyone. I'm on the episode where Jane Lynch's tape of her dancing to Physical leaks, and I just watched Matthew Morrison do Ice Ice Baby, and it was really bad. I hate it when he does anything musical.
It's a classic. Yeah.
Also, I just watched Kristen Chenoweth sing Home from The Wiz, which was literally a crime to watch. Like, that is like, how are you gonna have Amber Riley right there and then have Kristen Chenoweth sing that? It's
You're not ready for the guest stars to come.
I'm excited.
You're not excited.
I also think it's really funny that Jonathan Groff is like immediately in it. I think that's so funny.
Yeah. And that they play like lovers.
Right. They're just like, you gotta like, bring him so in. Anyway, back to Demi Lovato. They're really best known as a pop star. That's their main thing. They have an incredible voice. That's sort of been the main thing from the beginning. My favorite Demi Lovato song will always be Cool for the Summer, Closeted Bisexual Anthem. I love that song. I think it's so good. And also, okay, I forgot that they were in As the Bell Rings.
Yeah.
And of course, they were a child star on Barney, which will come up later because Selena was also on Barney as a kid. But okay, next person, we have Selena Gomez as Carter. Of course, best known, at least like at the time, as having been Alex Russo on Wizards of Waverly Place, a show I did not watch because she was such a bitch on that show and I didn't understand what the appeal was. Miley Cyrus was also a bitch on Hannah Montana, which I also hated. Anyway, maybe calling children a bitch is not my most classy choice, but I did it and I'm not taking it back. So sorry, everyone. Anyway, Selena Gomez is best known for being in the following movies and projects. She was in Spring Breakers, a movie I love and haven't revisited in a really long time, and it's probably aged badly, but can't wait to rewatch it. I feel like I love it in the same way that, like, early Lana is lovable in, like, the trashy white girl way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't hold it close to my heart at all like I do early Lana.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. Okay, also Monte Carlo, A Rainy Day in New York, Boo, Only Murders in the Building, Ramona and Beezus, was on Barney with Demi, obviously. And now she has this show, Selena and Chef. Yeah, it's like a cooking show where she's just like, haha, I'm with a chef. And doesn't she have lupus?
Yeah. Or she,
I don't know shit about lupus.
Remember Francia gave her a kidney?
Right. Francia, love. I love her so much. Okay. And again, that's Adrian on Secret Life of the American Teenager. Which, by the way, that show has gotten totally chucked to the back burner because of Glee for me. Which I know was your goal.
It should never come
back. Yeah, I mean, it's bad. It's really bad. Okay, next up we have Nicholas Braun as Ed. He was on Succession for a lot of it. He was in How to Be.
He is on Succession. It's still happening. Right.
I don't know shit about that. Shout out to that show.
I love him on that show. Everybody does.
Anyway, Succession, How to Be Single, Sky High, 10 Things I Hate About You, one singular episode of Secret Life of the American Teenager, and coincidentally, he was Ponytail Derek in Perks of Being a Wallflower. Yeah. Now, next, we have Molly Hagen as the director, which I can only assume is, like, the Russian lady in charge of the Princess Protection Program.
I remember her from, like, Phil of the Future or something.
She was Emma Roberts' mom on Unfabulous.
Yeah.
So that's really what we know her from. She is the mom on Unfabulous. But in addition to that, she is best known for having been in Walker, Sully, iZombie, Election, Herman's Head, and Jane the Virgin. But to us, obviously, Unfabulous is the main thing. Okay, just two more people. We have Robert Adamson as Donnie, who was in 365 entire episodes of The Young and the Restless, Lincoln Heights, Hollywood Heights, and Dave. Lastly, we have Jamie Chung as Chelsea. She is in Big Hero 6 and Big Hero 6 the series, Lovecraft Country, Sherwood, and was Mulan in Once Upon a Time, which I thought was funny. Okay, Audrey, numbers.
Okay, so the budget was an estimated $400,000. It's pretty low. Opening weekend, the film garnered 8.5 million viewers on its premiere, making Disney Channel the most watched network in the time slot with nearly double the viewers of CBS at the time. Fuck CBS. Just kidding. The estimated domestic video sales, $14,347,765. That's amazing. Yeah. For them. And Disney Channel promoted the film's premiere weekend by offering never-before-seen episodes of their original series, Wizards of Waverly Place and Sunny with a Chance, as an online reward if viewers could correctly count the number of times the words princess, princesses, and princesa are spoken during the film and enter the correct number into a section on their website. That's really funny because I noted how many times they were saying the word princess.
I also noticed that.
I was like, why are they saying it so much?
Yeah, it was honestly confusing when you're watching it. Like, there's so many, like, literal and meta levels of princess going on. Okay, so critical and audience opinions. We had a critic score of 60% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know why there was a critic score on Rotten Tomatoes, considering it wasn't a theatrical release, but whatever. Critic consensus. There was not enough critic reviews to have a consensus. But here's just a little blurbs. While this original adventure comedy doesn't stray far from the usual promotional model, writer Annie DeYoung ultimately throws in a nice message for young girls about self-esteem. Next one. A perfectly serviceable...
Did she?
I don't know. It seems like a reach to me. A perfectly serviceable preteen diversion boasting two highly talented stars, a digestible amount of adolescent drama, and a few snippets of principled behavior befitting royalty. And lastly, ultimately as silly and relentlessly lightweight as its myriad of made-for-the-Disney-Channel brethren. But interestingly, the film won the 2009 Teen Choice Awards for Choice Summer Movie, which to me, I'm like, should the,
it's not a summer
movie. It's not a summer movie, and I'm like, is it the Tween Choice Awards or is it the Teen Choice Awards? Because...
Well, it's really, true teenagers don't give a shit.
Right.
I feel like.
Right, I agree. Okay, audience moments.
Okay, so there's a 60% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes and a 2.9 star rating on Letterboxd. And again, with the Disney Channel movies, people are partly trolling with the 5-star ratings on Letterboxd. Audience opinions. Somebody on Rotten Tomatoes who gave it 2 stars said, this movie came out around the time when Disney Channel was really going downhill. It's like the writers have run out of ideas at this point. Seriously, can we at least have a TV kids movie that's not so formulaic like this one? Every DCOM is like this nowadays, and it drives me crazy. If you've seen one, you've seen them all.
True.
Yeah. And then Rotten Tomatoes, 3 stars. I remember when I was young, loving Disney Channel original movies and eating Cool Ranch Doritos doing so. This movie, good, but not their best.
Wrong there.
0.5 stars on Rotten Tomatoes. What a waste of my life. Mm-hmm. Hannah notes, huge eye roll here. Letterboxd, 3.5 star rating. They're lesbians. Correct. As we discussed in the Stuck in the Suburbs episode, you're reaching. This is a reach.
I don't know. That one's way less of a reach to me.
Less of a reach than this movie, for sure, but still a reach. 2-star rating, that shit was gay. 1-star rating, I hate it, but ... nostalgia.
Yeah. Okay, and now some tweets from recent-ish times. User at Put Me to Sleep, press play on Princess Protection Program, and Selena was really delivering the performance of a lifetime. From Twitter user, I disagree, but it's fine. Audrey's like, has like a sketchy look on her face. Like she's chewing that over and pondering.
Yeah, I mean, she wasn't bad.
No, but she's like, never bad.
I do think she's a good actor.
Same.
She's way better actor than singer.
Anyway, a tweet from OM Gwyneth saying, watching Princess Protection Program with white wine, fruit, and a freezy grape air pop. Maybe life is not that bad. A tweet from at Your Dumb Stalker, Princess Protection Program and a sandwich. I'm living the life. So this is a choice movie for snacking is what I'm picking up on. And lastly, at Only Takes a Taste, Lord wrote royals after watching Princess Protection Program. Hashtag real.
That's so dumb.
Audrey's so skeptical. Okay, so cultural context. We've talked about 2009. You know what the deal was. But as I was putting this together, I was like, oh, yeah. They were really into Selena and Demi being best friends. That was like a whole thing that Disney Channel hinged a lot of their shit on. And we got to start with the fact that the original song, One and the Same, was on the soundtrack for this movie. And that song is really good.
We're one in the same.
Yeah.
Hey, hey, hey.
Great song. Like, really, really good song. Fun fact about One in the Same. It was written by Vitamin C, a.k.a. Colleen Ann Fitzpatrick, a.k.a. Graduation Friends Forever.
Yeah, that's a banger.
It's such a good song. Okay, so I'm just going to gently lead us through this timeline of the Selena and Demi friendship because I feel like it is just like worth it to have this in mind. So as of April 2020, Demi on record has said that they are no longer friends. They're not friends. It's done. So as we said, they started on Barney together in the 90s and had been friends forever. But 2008 is when the infamous Selena and Demi vlogs started. If you remember, I'm pretty sure there was one of like Miley and her random friend that was supposed to be like making fun of Selena and Demi's vlogs.
Miley and Mandy.
Is that the friend she references in See You Again?
No, she says Leslie.
Damn it. I bet Mandy was like, fuck my life. Okay, so vlogs are 2008. Camp Rock and Wizards of Waverly Place are super big in 2009. They're very public with their friendship, doing joint interviews, like loving the branding of themselves together. However, in 2010, things start to get a little tense. So while signing autographs in London, a fan asked Demi how Selena was doing. And Demi said, ask Taylor, referring to pop star Taylor Swift, who Gomez formed a close friendship with after they both dated Nick and Joe Jonas, respectively. Taylor Swift always finds a way to be in the middle of shit like this. And I think that's really funny. So after both of the relationships ended, the Nick Jonas and Joe Jonas relationships, Swift and Gomez remained friends. In a 2009, Selena told Seventeen, every single problem I ever have is healable by Taylor Swift. So Demi's probably like steaming out in the distance because they are known to do that.
Yeah, I get it. I get Demi's perspective on this.
Yeah.
I feel like it would be genuinely infuriating to witness your best friend being basically stolen by Taylor Swift.
Yeah, it would suck.
And I think it would be hard not to be stolen by Taylor Swift were you in the position to be stolen by Taylor
Swift.
So I kind of get both of them in the situation. And yeah, I think they're all valid in their experience.
I agree. It's like, how can you refuse the friendship and love of Taylor Swift?
I don't know. I think the force is like too strong to resist. Like, cause you would at least want to know what it's like.
Yeah. So later that year, Demi is asked in an interview about Selena, and they say, we're both busy. I wish the best of luck for her. And then later in an interview, seemingly directed towards Selena's friendship with Taylor, Lovato also added in the same interview, true friends don't let their friends or family be mean to you. If you can't trust somebody, you can't be friends with them. So Demi's not having it. 2013, Selena and Demi are tweeting each other, supporting each other's music, but like clearly have grown apart. Also in 2013, Demi unfollows Selena on Twitter. And when asked about it, Selena says, I think it's just one of those things where people change and grow apart. And they're just kind of like vaguely posting about and at each other around this time. Now, fast forward to January 2018, Selena unfollows 279 people on Instagram, including Demi Lovato. And then in November 2018, Lovato unfollows Gomez on Instagram, and a source said that they want to avoid any difficult relationships. Okay, and we're almost done here. In April 2020, fans accused Lovato of having a private Instagram account called Trauma Queen Forever that appeared to be full of anti-Gomez content. They suspected that the account was run by Lovato after they went live on Instagram from that handle. And I love that for them. Like, I love how messy they are. And then, last but not least, on September 12th, 2020, fans circulated purported screenshots of Max Erich, Lovato's then fiance, professing his love for Gomez via social media. It's like, they were like older clips and tweets and stuff. And, Max claimed that they were fake. Also, I will say that when Demi's documentary about their like sobriety journey came out, that Selena was posting about it, like, love this for you, like, blah, blah, blah.
Nowadays, they both have brands that are related to sobriety and kind of like that sort of thing. But with Selena, it comes off a lot more like authentic.
Yeah.
Than it does with Demi. Just, I think with Demi, it seems like a more active struggle because they're not afraid to make their business public in that regard.
Yeah.
Which is respectable in its own right.
Yeah.
For sure. But with Selena, I think, I don't know. They both have had a lot of struggles in their life. And it is relevant to their brands now.
Selena just seems to have a lot more self-control.
Yeah.
Not so much, like, not necessarily in terms of, like, substances or whatever, but in terms of, like,
publicly facing
self-preservation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Selena seems to have really, like, strong boundaries.
Yeah, that is not the case with Demi, but I do love them, and I think they're super talented. Okay, so I had never seen this movie until I watched it for this very occasion. Was that true of you?
No, I had seen it, but I don't know when. Probably, like, roughly when it came out. And I didn't love it, so I didn't rewatch it.
Yeah.
But as I was watching it, what I remember more than anything with the movie is the music video for We're One and the Same that would play in the commercials.
Yeah.
So that's what I remember. And I did like the song. I thought, you know, like when the music video would come on in the ad breaks on Disney Channel and it'd be like so fun.
Yes.
That's how I remember it.
Yeah. I mean, that song is so good. And you can like actually hear the harmony in the choruses and stuff. It's also just funny because Demi's part is like 5,000 times harder, but like it makes sense also.
Yeah.
Okay. So I watched this movie on Disney Plus. I'm sure you did the same. And we'll be back after this break to talk about our thoughts on 2009's Princess Protection Program.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
Okay, everyone, we are back, and it is time to talk about 2009's Princess Protection Program starring Demi Lovato and Selena Gomez. Okay, so right off the bat, I feel as though we should address this movie is Aquamarine and Princess Diaries 2 blended together into one mediocre smoothie.
How is it aquamarine?
Because it's a fish out of water situation. Like, she shows up to this urban town and is like doing stupid things and not blending in.
Oh, I said Princess and the Pauper is more, I think Princess and the Pauper
also it
is more similar because we've got this Preminger situation.
I wrote that down too.
Yeah, I think it's Princess and the Pauper and Princess Diaries 2 more than it is Aquamarine.
I think it's equally Aquamarine.
I don't want to give it that. I don't want to give it that even sort of air of
the basic, but the basic like concept of Aquamarine is not like that's a trope, like a fish out of water movie.
But I think that there's enough movies that are fish out of water movies that aren't Aquamarine that we shouldn't compare it to Aquamarine.
Okay, let's make it Elf instead.
Yeah, it's Elf.
Let's make it Big instead.
What do we think the thinking was going into which person was going to play which part? Mm-hmm. Because
I wrote that down too.
It could have easily been the other way. It could have easily been Selena as Princess, Demi as Bait Girl or whatever.
Bait Girl. Why is it Bait? That is so funny to me.
But I kind of feel like they were almost, because at the time, Demi and Selena, they're really not very different in terms of who they are typecasted as. Not very different. And for some reason, if you were to, I feel like generally speaking, if you were to typecast them into those two roles probably Selena would be the princess, but also I don't know, because with Alex Russo, they definitely were trying to give her this thing of like a little bit of tomboy, but also really conventionally pretty. So it doesn't like, it doesn't necessarily work.
Yeah. I feel like they really wanted to keep up the whole like shady, not like other girls girl or like guys girl thing with her.
For Selena, yeah.
Yeah, and I think with Demi, they kind of had this like naivete thing that I think they wanted to lean into.
They did. Yeah, Camp Rock had that. Why was Demi always walking around just like smiling huge, like doing that like giant smile and being like, what's going on?
I don't know where else I've seen this, but I know it's a thing where writers will try to make someone sound like dignified or royal by like avoiding contractions. So like lots of Demi being like, I do not know what this homecoming is, or like, I will not do it. Or, you know, just speaking in this like really like lazy, like shorthand for formal.
Yeah.
Just by avoiding contractions.
Yeah, totally. And it makes the character sound like an alien rather than. And there is this whole thing going on in this movie of like really, really poorly done language barrier.
Yes.
We are too. We know that Princess Rosalinda is bilingual. Because
multilingual.
Yeah, like, yes, but that's not even really coming off because the American accent is so present. And I was kind of surprised that they didn't work with her a little bit more on at least her, at least their Spanish. Because the accent was really bad.
Yeah.
It sounded like seventh grade speaking test to me.
Yes, I agree. I totally agree.
But yeah, that entire thing, also the like the look and the cheapness of the other country, like the way that it looked was really sending me. It kind of reminded me of Twitches. Do you remember how in Twitches their mother is like in a castle type thing?
Yes.
And it really reminded me of Twitches in that like cheap castle look.
Yes.
And how like it looks like a cardboard wall. Like it just looks bad.
It was very like soap opera or like high budget drama club set.
I mean we've talked about this many times, but Selena Gomez would never be unpopular
unless maybe she would.
It doesn't matter. It's a little hard to buy for me. I recognize the mean girl in this movie so much, but I don't know what she's in. But I know
she's
her from
in a
something.
Lot.
Yeah,
she's
I know her from
stuff.
Something. Oh, yeah. Something I noticed. Why Demi Lovato's plots and all this Disney stuff, why is it always about being caught in a lie?
Yeah.
Demi's always being caught in a lie in like everything that they're in.
Well, at least in this one, they don't choose to lie. It is a lie that is put on them and that they have to do.
Yeah, that's true. But there's just always like a call out scene. Like that's like always what happens to Demi's character.
I will say that their acting kind of impressed me when they like fucked up at their job and then they were like, what's going on? And they were like so teary in their like cow baseball hat. I was like, these are kind of good tears.
Yeah. I think both of them are like pretty solid as actors, actually. Selena more so than Demi by a lot. But like for Disney Channel, when a lot of times you're just getting like caricature-esque performances.
Yeah.
It's hard to unlearn that, I feel like. And you can't really take that style into the movie as easily. The footage of the princess, like, isolated in, like, the North Pole or whatever.
Yeah, what was that?
That was crazy. I was like, maybe not that.
Yeah. That whole section, I was like, wait, why is the director Russian and why does this look like a Star Trek set?
Yeah.
It really looked like Star Trek.
The genre whiplash that that provided.
Yes.
Was
substantial.
Odd.
Did I make up that Selena's mom is dead in this movie? Like, do they ever acknowledge a mom?
I don't think they do.
I kind of appreciated that.
Yeah, I don't even think they do. They might, and I just missed it somehow, but I don't think they mention her. Usually when there's an absent mom, it'll be, I miss mom, or when mom died, or when mom left, or when mom blank, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think that was there. If it was, it was very subtle.
Yeah, at the end when the, Selena and her dad reunited, I was, fully bracing for, your mother would be so proud.
Yeah.
And it just never happened. And I was like, okay. Yeah.
I didn't enjoy the writing choices that were made, when Demi first arrives to the house and how they're kind of just sitting in the bedroom, staring blankly. I was like, yes. What? And if a princess was in this situation, I don't think they would be asking for a silk dressing gown or some shit.
No.
You're not dumb. you know what's going on.
That's the part that I know you're going to get mad again, but that's the part that reminded me of Aquamarine. The making weird demands for, things that she has at home. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it works in Aquamarine because that's a mystical character, you know? It's like, I can imagine what a princess in this situation would act like.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
In Princess and the Pauper, she doesn't even act like that. She's smarter in Princess and the Pauper. The logic behind this one is just thinner than usual.
It's very thin. I also love the romanticization of texting in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
When Chelsea's like, oh, we got a lot of texting to do.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? Me too.
I have so much. That's when texting was an activity.
Yeah.
It was not a utility to send a message. It was, I'm sending a message.
Yes.
Period.
Yes. I really wish that I had a cool phone.
You did have a cool phone. What are you talking about?
No, I'm saying currently.
Oh. Yeah, we had a lot of phones. I miss the era when everybody had a different phone and it was what are people going to come in with next? Who's the next person to get the NV2? The LG Envy.
Or the Razor.
The Razor. The Motorola whatever. The one, I have just so many images that come to mind. All the different ways that the phones could slide open and turn. It was a plot twist.
At every unfolding of a cell phone.
Yeah. When you had the one that I was the most jealous of was that red one that you had had a touch screen that slid open horizontally.
Yep.
I thought that was I remember sitting in the car going somewhere or whatever and watching you text probably Chris on that phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And being first of all, mad that you were texting so much. I did not appreciate how much you texted at the time. It was constant.
Well, the thing is, that's still how life is, but it's so baked into our everyday existence now that no one notices.
I remember being mad and jealous about it.
Oh my God, that's a lot of negative feelings. Yeah, I loved that phone. It was awesome. I always felt so cool texting. Texting was such an art back then.
My first cell phone came from Dad's car. Do you remember that? Well, there was there was the one that we shared that was the pink one.
Yeah.
And then when I had my own first phone, it was really just for the purpose of if you need to call us, basically. I wasn't supposed to be using it very much.
Yeah.
It was this Motorola phone that was not cute. It was like a flip cell phone.
I remember it. Yeah.
I covered it in flower stickers to try to like counteract the ugliness of the phone. But it came because, you know, people used to have car phones, like car cell phones.
Barely?
Yeah.
I don't remember that really.
Like before everybody had a cell phone that they would carry on them at all times, you might have a car phone. Yeah. And that's what that was. It like plugs into the car.
Anyway, I thought that the depiction of a political coup was extremely underdone.
Basically, that shot of like throwing a knife is so funny.
That was like the best and that was the first and best thing about it.
Or a sword, I should say. Not really a knife.
Knife. It's like a kitchen knife like flying across the room.
Yeah. And like the sense of urgency was not there. Like she almost just got stabbed in the head. And when they're running down the stairs, they're not even running. Like she's like,
I know.
She's like kind of moving, but she's not moving very fast.
She's like struggling with this hoop skirt. And I'm like, and there's not enough lining in that hoop skirt to make it look legit. It looks like party princess, low budget party princess.
Yeah, this low budge moment. I can't.
But I will say that the level of homosexuality and marriage for political purposes and not because of like creepiness contained in the villain in this movie is very Preminger-esque, as we said.
Yeah.
And pretty entertaining.
Yeah. I it's a trope that I kind of love.
I'm just surprised that they never like made a bigger deal of the fact that like Demi doesn't have a dad and Selena doesn't have a mom.
This could have been Parent Trap.
It could kind of, well, they tried to make it Parent Trap at the end, kind of, with the switching at least. The only problematic thing that I had written down, there's actually really only one of them is problematic, but one of them is just more of a question. The first one is, we made it so far without any kind of weight jokes, and we had to do the random throwaway carbs joke. I was just like, classique. We're so close to having made it through.
Yeah.
And then my other question is, okay, and this is not problematic. It's just weird. When Selena is like in her dress for the dance and she like reveals to her dad and she's like, what do you think? And he's like, I think I might have to stop calling you pal. I was like, why? What are you insinuating?
What is this usage of pal that you're using?
Like, what does that mean? Is being femme and being called pal, can you not have both?
You like, can't have both, apparently.
Mutually exclusive. That's the phrase I was looking for, I guess. Okay, I have a couple questions for you. Who really is Eddie?
As the resident expert on princess protection.
Like, who is he?
I don't know. Wait, who are you talking about?
He's the one who, like, puts the bowling shoes on Demi.
Yeah.
Is he just, like, Selena's friend? Like, who is he?
Mm-hmm. You think that they're giving him the secret Prince Charming edit?
Yeah.
Like, she has a crush on jock guy. He turns out to be a jerk. Eddie's there to save the day.
Right.
But that doesn't really happen.
Okay, at the end, when they, like, randomly have a whole group of friends to wear masks, I was like, where did they come from? Like, did they have other friends the whole time? Like, who are these bitches?
That is something I can't explain.
I was very confused by that. Also, one of my favorite moments is when the popular girl at the end is, like, freaking out and wanting the crown. And she, like, goes to grab it off Demi's head and is just like, no, and then falls into a pool that for some reason is there.
It's a Megan Fox confessions.
Yes.
It's a slight Cecilia Aquamarine.
I need to watch Aquamarine again, like,
it's
now.
It's a slight Sarah Paxton, Sydney White.
Yes. Public humiliation.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't have much more to say about this movie.
Honestly, I don't either. I just don't.
It's like not good.
It feels more like a product and less like a movie than most of their DCOMs. I mean, then again, I have to wonder how much of this is based off of our having grown out of it around this time. Remember in the New York Minute episode when I was talking about how this is not what we want to be seeing these girls do? This is not what we want to be seeing these girls do. Their chemistry is pretty weak.
I agree.
As friends. It's like we wanted it to be good because we know that they have this long history as friends, but it's actually not.
Also, it's like, good. How non-toxic are we assuming that that friendship was even when it was okay?
I mean, they're like competitors for the same stuff. You know, just because you've known someone for a long time doesn't mean you're compatible. Like, as best friends at all.
No. Because they were both, like, very much on the come up at the same time.
Yeah, so, like, that had to be fun.
Yeah, well, they probably also felt, like, less vulnerable as a unit than as individuals.
Yeah, and they went through, like, there was only, like, 10 people that they could talk to who were going through the same thing at the same time.
Right. It kind of reminds me of, like, the conversations we've had with Tina Majorino, like, talking about being a child star and feeling really isolated. I feel like maybe their attempts at being so unified was, like, them trying to resist, like, the pull of, like, isolation that, like, being a child star can give you.
Yeah.
Also, this is pure speculation, but I feel like Demi would be really hard to be best friends with.
Me too.
Like,
I've always thought that.
They just are really intense.
Yeah. Like, you got to be ready for a wild ride. And you got to be, like, flexible.
Yeah. And if you're someone who seemingly has good boundaries, like, that, of course, is going to piss someone off.
Yeah.
Like Demi.
Yeah. They want somebody who they can, like, really mold, I feel like. They want somebody that they can. And that's not, you know, that's not a diss to Demi's friends or whatever, but, like, they have to be willing to kind of undergo that. I don't know. It's an assumption, but.
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously assuming a lot, but, like, I don't know, especially when you're that young and if you have a friend who's manipulative, like, that can be really traumatic. And you have to learn to set your boundaries that way.
Yeah, and when I've watched the Demi content more recently, was there only one? There, whatever the docs were.
Yeah.
The interviews with the friends, I was like, oh my God. These people
haven't watched it in a long time.
These people have been through it and they seem, you know, they're probably more like family than they are friends. It's like that type of friend where it's like no matter what happens, like they're going to be there, which is like the perfect type of friend. For somebody like
that. Well, and also probably the type of person who can be like, shut up. Okay. Is this movie good? No.
No.
Is it worth watching?
No. Watch Princess Diaries 2.
I feel like it's worth watching if you are a big fan of Demi or Selena. But if you're not, it's very much not worth it.
Yeah, no. I think you can watch other movies and get a better example of this plot line than this movie, because it's not it.
Yes, I agree. So that's it.
That's it.
Sorry to the stands out there, but we did it. We watched it and we made it. Reminder that we still have our stuff on sale in the store. So if you want to pick up something cute, we still have hot deals going on. So make sure to check that out.
So as usual, you can find more from us at evergreenpodcast.com/sleepover-cinema and keep up with our latest creative projects at twopinkpictures.com. We're on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, literally every social media platform ever invented at Sleepover Cinema. And we post a full video version of each episode on YouTube and Facebook every Thursday. Yes, Facebook. Why? I don't know. Purely because I've been doing it since season one and now I feel like I can't stop. You can follow me, Audrey, at Audrey Anna Leach on everything.
And you can follow me, Hannah, at Hannah Ray Leach on everything. Ray is spelled R-A-E. if that helps.
I literally want to take my middle name out of my handle, but I can't because of you.
No, we've committed too much to the brand synergy for you to be able to take it out.
Well, do you remember when I did take it out and then you got mad?
Was I like, bitch, what are you doing? I feel like my name, Hannah Leach, is like really boring. So I put Hannah Ray Leach on everything. And people in Cleveland, like when they were in my play or like whatever, they're like, oh yeah, I was in like Hannah Ray Leach's bedroom culture. And I'm just eat it up.
Nobody does that. Cause I think that does make sense for you. Hannah Ray Leach is a lot more fun, but I feel like Anna almost brings me down. Like
that's cause you have a good first name and mine is so generic.
Like I need to change. Like I think Hannah Ray is stronger than Audrey Anna.
Yeah.
But we'll take that up with our parents.
Yeah, seriously, I have to petition them. Okay, so anyway, you can join us on our Discord server at the link in the episode description, or it's also linked on evergreenpodcast.com/sleepover-cinema. Again, we love our Discord server. We would love to have you there.
You can check out our merch, as we have already mentioned, at twopinkpictures.com/shop. It's on sale, and a few people have made purchases. Thank you. We love that.
Yeah. And again, as we were begging you at the beginning of this recording, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It's so nice and so affirming, and it helps the show grow. So thank you in advance. We appreciate you.
Sleepover Cinema is a production of Evergreen Podcasts, produced, edited, and engineered by us, Hannah and Audrey Leach. Sleepover Cinema is mixed by Sean Rule Hoffman, with theme music by Josh Perlman Hall. And our executive producer is Michael D'Aloia.
We will see you next week.
Bye.
Into your paradise. Don't be scared, cause I'm your body type. Just something that we wanna try.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Okay.
Okay, go.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least 2 traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.
This podcast was produced with the support of the Ohio Motion Picture Tax Credit and in partnership with the Ohio Development Services Agency.